Programming is sponsored by 6 Feet Over Under Productions. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Heart of Sports with Jason Springer and Jeff Cohen, powered by Elec825. I'm supposed to do this read with a straight face, Jeff.
Forget it. You don't have to.
We are thrilled to join you on WWDB860AM 97.5 HD2, part of the Beasley Media Group, ready to help you move into the weekend talking about all the news and world of sports. If you all only knew what goes on in the studios before we go on the air, you too would have a problem keeping a straight face opening a show. Jeff, I'll ask the question.
I'm just waiting for my Festivus miracles.
Well, there was a Festivus miracle. You knew about Thursday Night Football last night, but then when I asked if you stayed up for it, you said, nope. Yes. I saw it on replay.
That would have been a Festivus miracle.
So you did watch some of the game on Thursday Night Football, right? Or did you watch the Sixers? Not perform.
I did watch the Sixers, but that we can talk about that later.
So that's the difficulty. Is I asked you, like, okay, what are we going to start the show about?
And let's talk about how Chase Claypool is one of the most immature, dumb football players in the NFL.
And we'll get there with Leroy Horde at 4:35, who played football.
No, but I want to talk about it now because I watched the highlight. Not because I watch a lot. Not because I watched it live. But look, this is a guy who complained earlier this season that maybe they would do better if they would play different music during practice. And Mike Tomlin didn't like that comment. Can you imagine? I love Mike Tomlin. Can you imagine Mike Tomlin, what was going on? If you had those little cartoon bubbles above people's heads, as Chase Claypool, with no timeouts left, less than a minute to go, down a touchdown, decides that he's going to catch a ball and do a first down little celebration. While the center runs over.
You're generally anti-celebration anyway.
No, I'm okay with celebrations. I'm not okay with celebrating while your center is trying to grab the ball from you and tell you to get to the line, and you waste 18 seconds, which clearly should have mattered because they almost scored a touchdown on the last play of the game and would have had a couple more plays.
It was a terrible play. At the same time, did you see the holes that were being run through by the Vikings earlier in the game?
Yeah. Well, that was the third most yards, I believe, ever by a running back against the Steelers defense.
Troy Aikman's on the call of the game, and he goes, I had Emmitt Smith as my running back, and I didn't see holes even for him that were that big.
You know, we were supposed to have Ryan Shazier on, and hopefully we'll have him on another time. Can you imagine what he would be saying about that Steelers defense?
Oh,
maybe we should call Mean Joe right now.
Oh, he's probably very mean right now.
Hey, what'd you think?
The Steelers have had problems this season. I mean, look, they couldn't block anybody in the first half. Ben got beat up a lot. They definitely came back in the second half, became an interesting game while you were sound asleep.
Apparently one of the players who decided to try hardest was the oldest guy on the team.
Well, that does happen.
I mean, well, this Steelers team they should be much better than they are.
You think Tomlin survives this?
Yes. It's not his fault.
But Ben's gone after this, right?
I mean, I guess if you want to believe that some players have tuned him out, because if you listen to people like Ryan Clark and other former Steelers, they've got a lot to say. But I haven't heard anybody saying this is on Tomlin. Tomlin's a leader. But you wonder if, I mean, you always talk about whether or not players start to tune out a coach. They got to get rid of some of these players. They can keep Juju Smith-Schuster, and they can keep Diontae Johnson and find a third receiver. Plus, they have Gentry and Freiermuth as tight ends, and they got a good running back. As long as they have an offensive line, they can find another wide receiver. Though they also have Washington, too. So they don't need Chase Claypool.
Who want to know why you're breaking down Pittsburgh. The other option Jeff gave me to start the show was the Flyers. Yes. And I didn't think going with a team that's lost.
Jason
10 in
decided
a row.
He wanted to stay as far away from Philadelphia sports on the Philadelphia sports show as he could.
Well, it's not the best week or time right now.
By the way, did Carter Hart get an assist? Did Carter Hart get an assist the other night for the pass that he made that opened the goal?
That was the best thing that happened. it has been tough to watch them play.
I guess Vigneault can just like kind of sit back, and besides the fact that he's getting a big fat salary, but just sit back and go, keep doing that, guys. You're just showing him it's not my problem. It wasn't my fault.
They play in Vegas tonight. We'll see if it gets.
What did I text you the other night?
I don't know. You text me a lot.
Blow it up. Blow it. Now's the time. It's time. You're going to have to accept it. Rebuild. It has been, what, 45 years plus since they won a Stanley Cup? At what point do you say, as much, I love Claude Giroux, but if you need to start over, now's the time to do it. You do have veterans that you can get good young players and draft picks for, and then you have to make sure you have somebody in place that can actually draft better than what the Flyers have drafted. Well, I don't know if Chuck Fletcher is the answer.
That's the problem. They had gone in the opposite direction. We'll get back to the Flyers' epic disasterness in a little bit. Why don't we bring on the man himself, the voice play-by-play announcer for the Union, many other Fox Sports, you name it. He's out there
World
everywhere.
Club, you name it. Anywhere, yeah. He's there.
He's there. JP Della Camera, it was great to see you down at the Union Stadium last week. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good. Great to see you guys as well. When was that? Last Sunday, right?
Feels like a long time ago, right?
Weeks ago, yeah. Well, time stands still.
Have you gotten out of the parking lot yet?
It took a while. It took a while. But you know what, guys? When I see a game like that, you know, I don't mind waiting. You know, that was a big-time moment in Philadelphia Union history. That crowd was amazing, and the effort that those players gave was amazing. We had talked, we did the game on radio, Danny Higginbottom and I, and we had spoken about how in a 24-hour period, the story changed from favorites to underdogs, and the underdogs scored first and could have won the game.
Okay, so when they scored that goal, I can't remember. You've been to probably a lot more games than we have. I can't remember the stadium shaking the way that you could physically feel it shake after they scored that first goal.
Yeah, it was loud. And I remember when the goal was scored, I first thought it was Shabilko, was the own goal, right? I was thinking it was Shabilko from my angle. Couldn't see it as clearly as others could, depending on where you were sitting. But either way, you know, it's a great goal that they scored, you know, to get on the board first from the pass that was made and then, you know, the finish. And I remember saying something like, you know, will this be the biggest goal in Philadelphia Union playoff history? I said, we'll have the answer in about 30 minutes, I think I said. And then I came back later after NYCFC scored, and I think I said, I've just answered my own question. It only took about like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So I said the answer was no, it was not the biggest goal in their playoff history. But I do remember the stadium was exploding. It was really loud.
The mix of excitement and tension in the stadium was this amazing push and pull of what was going on. I wanted to take a step back with you, though. For our listeners who aren't as familiar, you talk about how they went from favorites to underdogs. Can you explain a little bit what happened, how the Union ended up with 11 players in protocol, with Jim Curtin saying after the game they're at home watching healthy?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I had more answers. COVID is something that nobody can seem to explain, right? Like, why does one team have one guy or two guys that get it? Nobody else gets it. And yet, you know, you're all in close proximity. You know, we're seeing Tottenham recently had, what was it, 9 players, something like that, that were not able to play, and 5 coaches. We've seen that, you know, from other teams elsewhere. So nobody seems to know, but I think everybody has different protocols, right? So the league has certain guidelines that they have. Teams are operating this way. Doctors are operating this way. But, you know, I take Jim at his word when he says, you know, that we had 11 guys at home basically with a case of the sniffles. So he's really saying that, you know, they had no symptoms. And so, you know, you had 19,000 plus people in that stadium, right, that didn't go through COVID testing like players go through. And yet, you know, they're in the building, right? So it seems like almost like there was a double standard, right? One for players and one for 19,000 people that were not 6 feet apart, guys. You know?
Right.
If they were 6 feet apart, the crowd would have stretched into the city of Philadelphia proper. You know, you have 19,000 people and they're all in there. So I felt bad for Jim. I mean, I felt bad for every player, but the players that I felt bad for the most were guys like Andre Blake, Ali Bedoya. You know, what a great captain. And you know, here he is on the sideline, you know, can't play. Jacob Glesnes, who did not miss a minute of any game all season, missed 1 minute in a Champions League game. I don't remember why they took him off and why, like, in the 90th minute. But, you know, every minute he was a warrior. And here he is. I assume all these guys were watching the game on ESPN at home because I'm sure they were not going to be allowed in the stadium if they had tested. You know, we can't even say tested positive, right? Because all they say is health and safety protocols.
Right.
So I'm not aware, guys, that 11 guys and a couple of coaches tested positive. That's not the way I understand it. You know, I don't know what the terminology is, but they could not play due to MLS health and safety protocol, which doesn't mean necessarily that they have it, but maybe they were in close contact with somebody that was, you know, or was around somebody that didn't follow the quarantine. But, you know, I heard all kinds of rumors, and none of those were true about, you know, what happened, how it spread and all that. So, you know, it is what it is. Great effort. Sorry for the team that they didn't have everyone healthy. I think if everyone's healthy, I think they're in MLS Cup.
So before we get to how do they recover from this, the question that I had was even after they scored the tying goal, NYCFC, I can't say that fast enough.
I know, it's hard.
We get to the, I believe, 88th minute, and they score.
Yep,
What happened at that point? Was it just that these guys who weren't used to playing this much just wore down?
Well, first of all, I think NYCFC is a fantastic team, and is great. A player as Castellanos is, and I think he's one of the very best in the league. You can easily replace one guy compared to, you know, 11 guys and what was it, five starters? You know, it's much easier. This was a whole new back line that the Union had. And the only guy, I feel bad for Baizo, you know, that was like an individual breakdown on that side, you know, on the last play. And it's never one guy's fault. You know, like how did the ball get there in the first place? And, you know, could anybody else have helped, you know, in that situation? But I think it's just one of those things that happens. It's like a Stanley Cup winning hockey coach once said to me, you know what the game's about? He said the game is about individual plays. And he said there's probably three or four of those in a game, and how you handle those is what makes you a winner or a loser on that day. And that was like 88th minute. I know one thing. I'm sitting there in the radio booth thinking, this surely is going to extra time. And I'm already thinking in my head, you know, is this going to go to penalties? Like, what kind of drama? Like, how is this going to play out? And so that goal came from, to me, really like out of nowhere. Nobody was expecting that.
Well, and the story would have been unbelievable leading up to that minute.
Still
an amazing story in terms of the players that they had on the field. I mean, you look at Colin, 37 years old, hadn't been on the field at all, had been more like a coach, and he's out there playing the whole time. So, I mean,
he played pretty well.
He did.
He played pretty well.
And look, you know? The thing with the Union, we always talk about it, Jim Curtin sort of represents the heart of the city, like he is a Philly guy.
Yeah.
That team played with the toughness that fans in this city respect and appreciate. They didn't say,
for sure,
we're underdogs, we don't have a chance, our
nope,
back line is out, our captain's out, our
nope,
brick wall goaltender's out. They went out there and they put it on and had a chance to win.
Yeah. Aurelien Colin hadn't played a regular season game in 2 years, right? Stuart Finley has only played in a handful of games. He was next to him. Baizo was the only guy there that was a regular starter for this team. Nathan Harrell had never played a game in MLS as a left back, and yet, you know, there he was. So one of the greatest things about this team was its consistency during the year. When you figure out that if you take Blake and the four in the back as a five, I mean, Glesnes played, as we said, every minute. Elliott played full 90s in every game but the one game he was suspended for. You know, Wagner and Baizo were probably close to 30 games started or 30 games played. Like, these guys were together, and now you're throwing out a goalkeeper who had only played in three or four games this year, you know, a left back who had never played there before, Finley who had only started a handful of games, Colin who hadn't played in 2 years, and the game was scoreless for the longest time. I thought the longer this game stays 0-0, the better chances the Union would have. I didn't see if it was going to be a high-scoring game. I would have guessed based on that lineup that NYCFC would be the team that would be on top. So, you know, full credit to them for the way they gutted this one out. They all bought in. I know Jim likes to say, you know, next man up, but it felt like the next 11 up, you know. They weren't trying to fill one spot, you know. They were trying to fill all of these places. The best thing they had going for them, though, was, you know, you had your two number 10s and Shabilko. You know, Flock was still there. Martinez was still there. So I thought that they still had a good enough base that if they kept it close, they could find a way to win.
All right. So the season's over. This is the farthest they've ever gotten. What do they need to do? I know it's early. What do they need to do next season to get them to the next level? Last year it was the Supporters' Shield. This year it's the conference finals. We're hoping next year they get there. What do they need to do, and what do they need to keep, or what's leaving?
Well, I think Ernst Tanner said it best. I can't remember which day it was. A couple days ago, he says we're looking for a striker. That's the top priority. So I think they recognize that Shabilko was the only guy that they could really count on. As talented as I think Sergio Santos is and Corey Burke is, they missed a lot of games due to injury. So Kasper was the only guy that you could count on to score goals, and he was streaky. So he ended up with, 12 for MLS, 17 when you factor in, you know, all of the games combined, but he was streaky. And if he wasn't scoring, you know, during one of those slumps, it seemed like no one was scoring. So whether they play next year whether they go back to that 4-4-2 diamond, whether they go back to what they finished with this year, you know, the 4-3-2-1 using the two number 10s, I don't know. But they do need another striker, maybe two, you know, depending on what other guys' situations are. So one top-notch striker for sure. And when I say top-notch striker, I mean a goal scorer, somebody that can get you minimum of 15 goals and preferably more. If they get that, and that's all that they get, I think they are significantly improved. I think re-signing Glesnes is huge. I would have guessed that there might have been some interest in him overseas. Getting him is good. I don't know what's going to happen, though, about other players, right? And I'm not trying to start rumors, but, I mean, if I'm a team in Europe, I'm asking about Kai Wagner. I'm asking about Jose Martinez, you know? I'm asking about Gazdag, if they could get him back, you know? Montero. They've got guys that other clubs in other countries are interested in. So I'm saying to you that striker is the top priority, and if they brought back this exact same team, which they won't, but if they did, and they just added a guy that could score 15 to 20 goals, they're already a much-improved team. I still think off-season, you know, somebody will probably leave, right? I would think, you know, somebody will make an offer for somebody. I don't know who, but hopefully it's not too many. But I think the core group is really good. And then you've got the young kids like Paxton Aronson, Jack McGlynn, Quinn Sullivan. Assuming that they all stay, you know, and not have interest from overseas. And I know that there is interest in them overseas, but I don't know what the – you know, what the dollars are. But assuming those three guys stay, I think their minutes will go up significantly.
That was sort of my question. You know, it seems like they have a little bit of flexibility potentially to explore moving some of those players overseas when you've got young guys like Paxton and Jack McGlynn, Nathan Harrell, who played well in that game, who barely got any time during the season. So what do you think the role of the young players will be next year? How expanded do you think that would be potentially?
Well, I think that if you look at the three of them, I mean, they could all compete for a starting position. There's no doubt in my mind about that. I think Paxton Aronson showed when he had to start in games, you know, what he could do. So if those three do come back, for sure, significant roles. But they'll also be on the U.S. Under 23 radar. They already were at the end of this year, right? So those are three guys that would get, you know, more playing time. I think that, you know, the rest of it, I guess we'll see. I mean, I'd love to see that back four return intact with Blake and have Jose Martinez there. And maybe they can keep those guys. So I think, to me, everybody has opinions on players, right? Martinez is one of the best in the league as a holding midfielder. So I hope that they can keep him. And Kai Wagner, to me, one of the best left backs, justified his all-star selection earlier this year. So, and I know there's interest in those guys, but there always is. So the trick is, you know, Ernst knows what he's doing, obviously. I mean, Philadelphia is the talk of this league now in how they've operated this team in terms of the money that's been spent, in terms of the academy. There's a myth out there that they don't spend money on players. They do. You know, the players' salaries are part of public record with the Players Association. You know, they are spending some money on players. So I think that's a myth. And I've seen, you know, other teams say this is a way we can get it done. We don't have to spend $31 million or whatever that figure was that Atlanta spent or Toronto spent. They can do it this way. And so Philadelphia went from a team that people weren't having in the conversation to a team that others are trying to emulate more and get away from, you know, their own business plan.
Yeah, but the thing about success is, especially in the front office, is that everybody wants to duplicate it and everybody wants to steal it. So
right.
you have Ernst, but you also have Jim Curtin. And the rumor was out there, and we're all holding our breath for the answer to this. Tell us Jim Curtin's not going anywhere.
I hope so. I hope he's not going anywhere. I know he's got. I think it's 2 years left on his contract. So I think for any team to try to get him, you know, they would have to ask permission of the union, and I think the union refused. At least that's what the rumor is. I didn't ask Jim myself. I thought he had a bigger fish to fry on game day, so I didn't want to bring that up to him. You know, I was mostly talking COVID stuff. But I did see the rumor out there. I had heard that rumor, by the way, over a month ago before it was ever printed. I think it makes sense that Chris Albright would approach Philadelphia to see if, you know, if he was available. Everything that I read said that Philadelphia said no.
JP, we can't thank you enough, man. It was great to see you at the stadium. We enjoyed hearing your voice all season. Look forward to seeing what you're calling in the union offseason and then getting you back on as this all starts up again. Always appreciate the time, man.
That'd be great. I didn't realize how quickly the season was starting until I read somebody wrote 6 weeks until preseason. I'm thinking, wow, that's, you know, that's early. We get started now late February, so that's great. I'm looking forward to see what this team does to make themselves better to contend for MLS Cup next year.
Sounds good, man. You have a great day. Thank you so much.
You too. Enjoy the weekend, everybody.
Jeff, he's right. The atmosphere down there was just truly unbelievable.
It's been incredible. I mean, I'm telling you that it was amazing to be there. It was amazing to, like, I don't know, when I walked in the building, I didn't think it was over. And I didn't get the impression that everybody else thought it was over because half their team wasn't able to play.
No.
And if you were watching, if you went to the World Series or you went to the National League Championship, and at the National League Championship, they announced the day before, Bryce Harper's not playing, JT Realmuto's not playing, Reese Hoskins isn't playing, Zach Wheeler's not playing, and name a couple other players that are really good that aren't playing. How many people would be selling their tickets on StubHub or trying to?
Oh, without a doubt.
That place was sold out, and I don't think there was a single person there that didn't think that somehow they could pull this out.
It was totally electric down there, and it was an absolute blast. And it's a shame that they had to play through what they did. It's a shame how it ended. But again, they continue to be one of the most fun teams in the city, and you should go out and catch a game next year. It'd be good. Jeff, why don't we hit the break? When we come back, we'll talk a little more. We'll get to Leroy Horde. Stick with us, and we'll come back.
Operating engineers are the men and women that move mountains. And the Engineers Labor Employer Cooperative, ELEC, puts them to work. They create opportunities for the men, women, and union signatory contractors of Local 825, repaving our roads, keeping our homes bright and warm, and even building our favorite team stadium. We understand infrastructure. That's why ELEC and Local 825 are ready to get to work.
Jeff, that was a fun one. Always great to see and talk to JP. Obviously, after 4:30, if you keep listening here, you can catch us on the stream. You can catch us on the replay on Tuesday. You can catch the interviews out online. So plenty of places to keep watching.
You can catch us on the podcast, on iTunes.
You can catch us on Google Play. We never do that.
What?
We don't publicize where you can find us. You can literally find us everywhere. Like, you can subscribe on SoundCloud.
Many of our family members would be dismayed at that, wouldn't they?
Believe me, they hear way too much of me talking.
Wait, I can listen to you other places? Oh.
Yeah, so I don't know that they want to hear me, but they can. And you can sometimes you can even see these interviews on YouTube.
Yes, but can they hear you do a fake accent in the South?
I am not Brian Kelly. So, no. And I know that you were watching that and got a kick out of
why?
That when it
why,
happened.
Why do that? Why? Now, he is an experienced recruiter, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Does he not know that every other coach in the SEC is going to walk into a recruit's home and now go, this guy left his team on the eve of finding out if he was going to be in the college football playoffs. And by the way, he came down here, and this guy is such a phony that he can't even be himself, especially Nick Saban. Nick Saban doesn't go down and pretend that he's from Alabama. He's confident in himself. Brian Kelly walks down there, and he tries to put on a Southern drawl.
Were you surprised?
Yeah, I was surprised.
Oh, come on. No, you weren't.
Yes, I am, because I'm surprised that somebody that's been around the sport for that long, talked to that many parents, done that many press conferences, is that clueless
actually,
as to because he you don't think he's walked into other people's homes and criticized other coaches for being phony and that you can't count them on them and something else?
Look, I know it's hard to say goodbye, but you would think he'd get better at this. Like, his daughter is still a student at Notre Dame. She now has to deal with the fact that her father left.
Yeah, well, that's not her fault.
I hate that stuff. That's the thing. She's going to have to be subjected to that because he couldn't even handle it the right way.
I mean, think about it. I don't know. I mean, you can jump right to the whole, in a worse situation, the whole thing with Matt Nagy and people at his kid's sporting event, or I think it was the school football game.
Fire Matt Nagy.
You cannot do stuff like that.
While Matt Nagy's in the audience.
Yeah, like you can't do that. The level of crassness and classlessness it takes to do that in front of, like, for anybody who thinks it's okay to chant, fire somebody, yes, you have freedom of speech. But keep in mind that there is a kid that's wondering whether his father or mother is going to lose their job. And that is a big thing for a kid. If you're doing it at a professional stadium, they can say to their family, you know what, maybe it's best you don't come, like Matt Stafford's wife, for other reason.
Sometimes it's so that you don't comment and make the situation worse. Look, it's got to be hard to be family, though. I mean, thankfully for my kids, I won't have any athletic ability that,
will be criticizing and hoping that the team trades you, huh?
No, is that not what you're at all. But I mean, that's got to be
hard. There's still shuffleboard. Not shuffleboard.
Curling.
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 That's okay. Always been my dream.
The Winter Olympics are coming up.
It is the old man's dream that you can become a curler and be in the Olympics.
Are you going to watch?
I've gotten the point.
Do you watch the Winter Olympics?
I like the Winter Olympics better than the Summer Olympics, but it's just gotten to the point where I don't want to watch an Olympics with nobody there. Do you? Okay, that's watching downhill skiing without the people, you know, with their cowbells and all the people on the sideline and that kind of stuff.
I like bobsledding.
Yeah, so. That too. But it's all. But
I'd be way too afraid to do it. But I totally love other
you know
people
what?
Doing it.
If we can find somebody that can help us do it,
even.
No, we are going up to Lake Placid and
no,
doing it. That is a dream
not.
Of
Look,
mine.
I have agreed to sleep outside in the cold. I have tried out
you
for
won't
a minor
go down
league basketball
in a
team.
Sled?
Jim Curtin has said that people can take penalty kicks on me. There is zero chance that I get in that sled and go down the ice.
We can go slow.
Absolutely zero
We don't have to go 90 miles
that,
an hour.
That happens.
Are you serious?
You can go take one for the team on
I wasn't
one.
Saying that you were going to go. What's the other thing? Skeleton. Yes.
That ain't happening either.
wait, there's one they go down feet first, and the other one, just because feet first isn't enough, that you can go down head first.
Yeah, that's not going to happen
Which
either.
One's that?
I don't know. I don't even like going down the kid's slide head
one's
first.
Luge is feet first, and I think skeleton is head first.
You're correct.
I'm not asking you to do that. I'm asking you to go down in a sled with sides.
Okay, so did you ever see Cool Runnings? Yes. Where they like start off where they just kind of gently push on the flat part of the ice. Yeah. That's my kind of bobsled. Going down the hill when you're like 80, 100 miles an hour.
Come on.
Zero chance.
I'm not asking you to jump out of an airplane.
Zero chance. It's not going to do that either.
It's
cool.
It's just sledding. You didn't sled as a kid. You didn't get on like in college, you didn't get on like a cafeteria tray and go down a hill. It's the same thing.
That is not just sledding.
Come on.
Look.
Well, you didn't answer the question. Have you gone sledding on a cafeteria tray?
No.
Well, then we got to get you out. Of course, it has to snow at some point, but
that I will do. I mean, we're talking to a guy who's in Miami right now, so I'm going to bring on Leroy Hort. I don't really think he's going to talk about bobsledding snow.
Let's bring on a guy who's really from Louisiana.
That's right. Bring him on. Yeah, maybe you know how to do a Louisiana accent since Brian Kelly's kind of not figured it out yet. Leroy Hort, thank you so much for joining us, man.
No problem. That's terrible.
What was your reaction?
That's not a Louisiana accent. You want to know a Louisiana accent?
Yeah.
Here's what you do. You take a deep breath, and whatever you have to say, whatever story you're telling, you say it in one word. That's Louisiana. Because if you stop, somebody else going to start talking. You got to wait to finish. So that's Louisiana.
Look, Leroy, you were recruited heavily when you came out of high school.
Me and Ward were the first two people recruited out of Louisiana.
Wow.
At Michigan?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you learned to say things in more than one word.
Yes.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question. We weren't actually going to go here, but we might as well ask a guy from Louisiana. If you were being recruited and a guy from Notre Dame who just came to LSU started pulling out a Southern drawl.
Who was from UMass, from Massachusetts?
Yeah. What would you do and what would other coaches be saying to you when they were recruiting you?
It wouldn't even make it that far because my mom would look at me and say, is he serious? So look, one of the things about sports, and you guys can tell me, one of the things I've always learned is be sincere. You can have a take. People don't have to agree with you. But if you're keeping it real, people appreciate that.
They'll respect you.
They'll respect. Correct. And so that's one of the problems that sometimes athletes have with journalists and reporters is that they want the hot question. It has nothing to do with who they are, but they want you to be personal. And there's a conflict there. But every time I've ever had a conversation with a person, I've been me. I'm not a person who's hateful or harmful or you're gonna have to have the hot take. And so when I say something, people usually, take it for what it is, whether they agree or not, because I always keep it real. Now, that is not real. Not even close.
Look,
somebody in this family had to say, whoa, man, what are you doing?
Well, look, I could also vouch for the fact that Leroy was always real, much to the chagrin of your coach at times.
Yes. I think here's where I was and here's why there was conflict. Not bad conflict, but just conflict in general. Because I thought it was hilarious that I would have to practice with guys who I knew couldn't tackle. And so I almost was offended that I had to stop and give them the satisfaction that they tackled me. And so I would laugh and joke and play. And Bo would be like, you got to take this serious. And, college, rah-rah or whatever. I'm like, if I got to go out and kind of boost myself up to go out and play football, that means I can't play. So why are we doing this? All the rah-rah guys are special teams guys. They go out for two plays, come out, and then piss everybody off when the offensive defense got to go on the field. So that's how I viewed that. So I always, and I tell people all the time, let me have my method of going out and getting my ass kicked on every play. Right? You think it's tough? Imagine being a running back. You get hit on every play you're in the game. Let me deal with it the way I want to deal with it. Don't tell me how to deal with it. Don't. If I want to laugh while I'm getting it, let me laugh. If I want to talk trash, let me talk trash. Because in the end, there's only a select few people that have played this game that can go out there year after year after year and take that pounding and still give 100% effort every time. So eventually, Bo started calling me Leroy the Magnificent. He says, because your methods are a little bit different, but you always get it done.
You know, you mentioned teammates. Jeff and I started the show talking about the Thursday night game last night. Don't know if you caught the Steelers game, the Chase Claypool celebration while his offensive lineman is trying to spot the ball again, clock running. What would you have done if your teammate was busy making a first down sign?
First of all, I know for a fact that the two teams that I mostly played for in Cleveland and Minnesota, we had a couple of offensive linemen that went and clipped him and got his butt in the right position, right? So he would have got tackled by the defense, and then one of the offensive linemen would have took him out and say, what are you doing?
Well, the center did. The center ran over and tried to grab the football right away from him.
This is the world we live in now. That even as we talk about the game, we talk about individuals as the cause of winning and losing, and then we get offended when the players treat it like, look at me, right? It was, we used to be able to talk about a game and say, you know, the running game wasn't good, or the passing game wasn't good, or the defense isn't stopping anybody. Now we look at it as, this guy was a first rounder. He can't get us more than 3 yards of carry, right? Quarterback, all he throws is throw dinks and dunks. We need him to throw it down the field.
We hear that every week with Jalen Reagor right now.
Right, right. And so when you think about football, the ultimate team sport, because I can tell you, a lot of people might not know who my left guard was, but I knew if he didn't block, I was in trouble. Right? If he didn't block on a consistent basis, I was in trouble. I knew I don't care how open you are, if the quarterback can't get it there or the line isn't protecting, then you're not going to be able to celebrate your touchdown. It is the ultimate team sport, and I was fortunate that everywhere that I played football, including college, I played with a great group of guys. We all cared about one another. We all wanted the success, even in Cleveland when we weren't good all the time.
Yeah,
so I was fortunate.
Well, talking about teammates, for those that don't know, Leroy was the MVP of the Rose Bowl in 1989. Quick quiz question. What two Michigan players actually have won the MVP of the Rose Bowl since you did in 1989?
Oh.
I would guess Tim Biakabatuka.
No.
No?
Uh-uh.
Hold on.
Jeff needs like the Jeopardy music.
I don't know. I can't tell you.
Ty Wheatley and Brian Greasy.
Brian Greasy.
Yep. There you go.
Yeah, you wouldn't have gotten that one.
I would have got Tyrone Wheatley.
Yeah. But
because Tyrone Wheatley and Tim Biakabatuka were the two guys that just destroyed Ohio State and then went to the Rose Bowl.
Well,
Brian Greasy, I can't remember. Like, yeah.
Well, don't be too modest. I believe in your time, I believe Michigan won 3 out of 4 against Ohio State, unlike the last decade or so. But I was there.
You got one this year.
That's right, and I was there for that. But
and
I wanted to talk to
you. Hasn't let me forget about it since.
Well, yeah, but Leroy, I believe your freshman year, one of your teammates was the current coach of Michigan.
Yeah, Jim Harbaugh. I've known Ward Manuel since we were 10 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. So we played Little League together. We went to different high schools. We played against each other. And in fact, the only reason why I got recruited to go to Michigan was Elliot Uzalak, who was the O-line coach at the time. He was recruiting Ward, who was the Gatorade Defensive Player of the Year. And we just happened to be playing them, and we destroyed them. So then he started recruiting me.
That's amazing.
Yeah, well,
yep.
Wait till Ward sees this tape.
No, hey, let me tell you. I got, me and Ward have been friends forever. Played a lot of sports together because New Orleans is really small. People don't realize, you know, like, you play sports with the same guys in your area, every sport through every weight class or age group. So my friends that I played baseball, football, basketball with, I played every sport from the time I was 8 or 9 till I went to high school. And then some of those guys I played with in high school. And so we, me and Ward, we were from different parks or different areas, but we always played on the all-star teams together.
All right. So let me ask you a question. If you, even though he was your teammate, and even though the athletic director was your buddy since you were 10, if I said to you before this season that Michigan was going to be in the college football playoff, only lose one game, where would you have had me committed?
I wouldn't have. And here's why. I'm a little more patient with things than most people.
Well, that's because you're from Louisiana.
And one of the things that I appreciate, and I've always appreciated in sports, is patience. And keep in mind, okay, I played for a team that ran Bill Belichick out of town. Okay? And I'm not saying it would have worked out, but I'm saying it just proves that he was a good football coach that needed time. We hire these first-time coaches and expect them to just be awesome coaches right away. And if they don't, we get rid of them. And then a lot of times they go coach somewhere else and they come back and then they move around. And then after their second or third stint, okay, because mm-hmm. I guess here's, you want to hear one? How about Lane Kiffin? He bounced around a whole bunch of times. Now it looks like he's on solid ground. He's going to be a coach somewhere.
Well, the key is somewhere. Coach. Who knows how long he stays until he goes to the next job.
Right. But I love what Pittsburgh does. They hire a coach. They go through the process. They hire a coach. And then they turn the page and start concentrating on the team. They don't worry about the coach. They don't criticize the coach. They let him coach. And he is going to be the coach for a substantial amount of time. They've done it throughout the history of their football club. And guess what? It's proven that it works because every coach they've had has won a Super Bowl.
You know, you talk about coaches. We've seen insane movement in the last few weeks. Lincoln Riley's at USC, Brent Venables to Oklahoma, Brian Kelly to LSU, Mario Cristobal heading your way at Miami, Chip Kelly potentially talking to Oregon again because why not? What are your thoughts on the coaching moves and what it means to the players who commit to those coaches who then either decommit or are at a university with a staff that was not who they chose?
Let's not fool ourselves. It's a business. I'm never going to get mad at another person for doing what's best for him. Now, if you go to those kids and say, hey, your university is offering him $4 million, but that university over there is offering him $8 million. What would you do? We understand, coach. Have a nice life. That's the reality of it.
Right.
You can't in that situation be upset that a coach decides to go make money. It's called a profession. Right? Because guess what? All things being equal, if he struggled the next couple of years, they ain't going to hesitate in firing him. So why wouldn't he, if he gets an opportunity to make more money, go do it? If you're going to get fired anyway, you might as well maximize what you can get while you can get it. So I'm never mad at a coach or a player. And guess what? That's life. Like, we big boys. Hey, big boys.
Yeah, I agree with you, but there's a way to do it. I mean, you can't do what Cristobal is alleged to have done, which is like be in kids' homes with their families and tell them, you know, rah rah, come to Oregon, that kind of stuff. No, but he knew at that point. At some point, he knew. Come on.
See, you're making assumptions.
I love
here's the Miami guy.
I love this.
You're making assumptions just to fit what you believe, okay? I don't know what that situation was. To be honest with you, I never thought he'd come here for this reason. Miami has never spent this amount of money on their football program ever.
Yeah, it's a huge commitment what they're doing bringing him there.
They're spending $8 million on a new coach, $9 million to buy him out, and $8 million to get rid of the old coach. That's not even counting who they're paying for assistant coaches.
And what about the athletic director, too?
An athletic director.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? When you go cheap for so long, that's what it costs you. You got to overpay to get the guy you want. So, look, I'm not mad at any coach for doing that because I certainly didn't feel sorry for Manny Diaz for getting fired. Right?
Like, he got paid. He got paid on the way out the door.
Right. Once you sign that, see, here's the thing that kills me about all these other jobs in sports. There is only one job that's not guaranteed, and that's an NFL football player. Everybody else traded, bumped, moved around, you go somewhere else or whatever, it's fine because once you sign that contract, it's guaranteed. And so I only ever feel sorry for a guy that signs this contract, makes that commitment, maybe could have went somewhere else as a free agent, but decides to come here, and in a year and a half, he's cut. That's it. That's the only guy I'll feel sorry for. Because guess what? The team is basically saying, my bad, we gave you too much damn money. We don't want to pay you no more. What world does that work in other than professional football?
None.
It doesn't.
None. So, I mean, look, we've talked to a lot of former NFL players, including a lot of old ones. We talked to Mean Joe Green a couple weeks ago about how that generation, the generation even before ours, that of how nobody took care of their health insurance, and it, you know, it is baffling to me that the NFL still doesn't take care of players who built this league into what it is when they have the money that they could do it.
You know why? Because they can.
Yeah.
Like it takes a different type of person to volunteer his money to take care of somebody else. See, in the world we live in today, you know, whenever we do something like that, philanthropic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Most people go out and tell everybody they did it. And for the NFL to do something, and I think they're trying to, right? I think they're trying to. I'm a firm believer that you can only get what's available when you work. Because think about this. They have the health program now where you get X amount of dollars for every year of service. I missed out on that for one year. If I had known that deal was on there, I would have sucked it up for 1 year because that would have set me up for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
So we just, you don't know. And granted, they can do something, but they don't have to. I have to understand that. Now, it doesn't mean that I can't ask them or we can't say, hey, the game is booming. You can do something. And they've tried to. So I'm not going to get on them too much for that. Okay? Because in any other profession, see, the problem with this is when you have a profession where your contract is not guaranteed, it makes it more difficult to get into these deals where the insurance and everything is taken care of. And I think that's the problem. Like me personally, I think the NFL should have shorter contracts and guaranteed contracts. Because guess what? You won't be signing these 12-year, $270 million with $110 million guaranteed to make it look good. It'll be a Kirk Cousins deal. 3 years, $90 million. We'll revisit it again. We'll sign you early if you're doing well, but you're going to get this $90 million.
And you're going to get your
health
insurance.
And all these contracts wouldn't be ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
especially after you get vested, especially after you play a number of years. Because when you go, look, when you get to your fourth and fifth year, that's the big contract right there. You should be able to cash in.
If you're still around.
If you're still around.
Yeah.
Correct.
I mean, look, well, the position you played around, you 3 years is a long time.
If you're not around, you don't deserve to be. Okay, there's teams that draft the wrong guys. Like, let's not let them off the hook either.
Like, don't worry. We have that in Philadelphia.
I was gonna say, I've got Jalen Reagor instead of Justin Jefferson, and Jeff never hears the end of it. So don't you worry. Yeah. You mentioned coaches and patience. We had that here. Nick Sirianni's first couple weeks, they wanted to run him out of town because he's making flower analogies. Then all of a sudden he starts running the ball and they're like, this is a good team. Then Jalen Hurts has a terrible game and we need to get rid of him. Then Gardner Minshew comes in. Oh, he's the best thing ever. And now we've got to have a quarterback controversy. Like, this roller coaster is just ridiculous.
It's football, and it's not all sports, because guess what? In basketball, if you make that investment, you're going to see it through. In fact, most of the time, their rookie guys sit out a year. They get a free year of money.
Wait, in Philadelphia, it's mandatory. Yeah, you have to sit out at least 2 years.
Yeah, and then we pay our guys after they sign extensions, and they decide they don't want to play, and then they sit out.
You know what I do? I always root against Philadelphia.
Thank you.
Oh.
Let me tell you why.
And we were just going to get to the whole Philadelphia is playing Miami
because of the process.
Let me tell you why. That is exactly correct.
Yep.
Because if you have a group of guys and you let them think that it's acceptable to lose, then they're never going to fight through it. And that's what you have right now.
Well, so
a bunch of guys on your team that they don't know what it's like to fight through a struggle, because anytime they've had some kind of struggle, it's the process.
But we had one of those guys. We traded for him, and then we traded him to Miami. So now you have him. So we got Josh Richardson. Oh, that didn't work out either. So what is it? What have you seen from afar what Jimmy Butler has done since he left Philadelphia? What do you see on it when you get to see him on a daily basis as to what that mentality means to a team and how the rest of the team goes as he goes?
When you watch sports, any team, anywhere, you see that one guy that's like the spark plug, right? He may not be the engine. He may not be the high-powered, fuel injection and all that. But without him, it doesn't work. Without that spark plug, without that energy, without that want to, without that fight, without that determination, everybody else just seems to fall in line. Right? That's what he was in Philadelphia. Okay. Jimmy Butler's on your team, your defense automatically gets better. Now, I don't know what that has to do for all the other guys. Maybe they look at Jimmy and say, we better get on point here, because this guy's balling. He's giving us effort. He's putting everything into it, and he will not allow anybody else to come into the game playing soft. And you think, when you measure the numbers and this and that, oh, we can get another guy to do that. But you can't. You can't. And now you're finding out that all the things that you did, the worst thing you did was let Jimmy Butler go. Because I tell you what, with Jimmy Butler there, he would have kept everything else in order. They may not have liked it, okay? And that's the problem with young players in a lot of sports right now. Is you pamper them, you tell them about the process, don't worry about it, sit out, you're our guy. And then when it's really time to be the guy, they can't fight through adversity. They want out. You know, if you hold them accountable, if you tell them, hey, man, you got to be better than this. We're paying you a lot of money to be better. Instead of fighting through it and saying, you're right, I don't want to play here anymore.
All right, so
that's what the situation is there.
So how bad does Jimmy Butler want to beat the Sixers when he plays them? And what's going to happen next week when the Sixers play?
You know what? He says it all the time. He really, really, really likes Joel Embiid.
And Joel really liked him. He didn't want him to go.
There's no hard feelings about, look, think about this. You think Tom Brady feels anything towards New England? He won a Super Bowl. He don't give a damn about New England no more. Right?
And it's a whole lot warmer.
Right? You think Jimmy Butler cares about Minnesota and Philadelphia? No, he went to the finals a couple of years ago. He's where he wanted to be. He wanted to have success. So, like, even though they try to make this a thing, especially in basketball, it's not really a thing because they all know each other. They all like each other. They're all friends.
All right. Well, we got about a minute left. We got to get a prediction from you as the Michigan guy. What's going to happen with the college football playoff? Does Michigan have – they're 7.5-point dogs right now against Georgia. Yeah, this is happening in your backyard. What is going to happen? I know you're going to be
there. I'm going to tell you right now, right? Georgia is a fraud. You can't be the best defense in the country and give up 41 points and get pushed around and punked, okay? So there's blood in the water. And guess what Michigan does? Run the football, get after the quarterback, and control the line of scrimmage. That's a bad mix for Georgia because they don't really – they throw the ball about like Michigan does, and they rely on their big uglies up front to just go and manhandle the other defensive line, and they big ball everybody. Then you start – when the team loses like that, you know what you do? You go back and check out their victories. You go back and check who have they beat, their big SEC. Who have they beat? You go and check all of those games they played.
I love the confidence. Jeff has not had your confidence all season, by the way.
Guess what? The only time I ever got mad at Jim Harbaugh, the only time, stop switching quarterbacks. I get it. You want to get the young guy in there to do something, but he did that against Michigan State, and they fumbled.
Oh,
and I was like, that's it.
You're done.
Enough of that.
You're done with patience at that point.
He wasn't done with it. He's not giving up on it.
He's not giving up on it, but guess what? You know why? Because all they got to do is hand it off to those two guys in the back.
Well, Leroy, look, we'll be watching. We'll be watching see what Jimmy Butler.
Michigan is not a 7.5-point underdog to anybody in this country.
Well,
nobody. You can do two things. They can do the two things that travel anywhere in the world to play football. Run the ball, stop the run, get after the quarterback. You can do those things. You can play with anybody.
And we got a kicker. Well, don't forget, we got a kicker.
Look, if and when Michigan wins, I'm sure Jeff will want to be talking about it on the radio. So we will have you back to come talk.
I didn't know it was a Michigan day. I would look all my. Let me tell you.
I have to deal with this all the time.
All my stuff is dirty.
I'm a Rutgers grad, so the best I got is that we knocked off Purdue last night with a last-second shot, but I got nothing for you.
2 years ago, we had the Rutgers rule.
Yeah, I know.
That means we bet against Rutgers in every football game.
You do very well if you do that, by the way. When I was in college.
Thank you. You just gave me fodder for the next 5 years. The
Rutgers rule. The Rutgers rule.
When I was in college, I did the same thing. Leroy, thanks so much, man. You take care of yourself.
All right, man.
Take it easy. Jeff, we're out of time here. We're going to have to just go to the end. Thanks so much for joining us this week. Make sure to join us next Friday night to help you start your weekend in style. Have a great one, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.